This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the movie set shooting of Helena Hutchins, which involves the actor Alec Baldwin, and compare the incident to the shooting of Brandon Lee, the son of Bruce Lee? On October 21, 2021, at about 1:50 p.m., sheriff's deputies responded to a movie set at the Bonanza Creek Ranch in Santa Fe County, New Mexico. An accidental shooting had been reported. Two people had sustained injuries. A 42-year-old cinematographer named Helena Hutchins was airlifted to the University of New Mexico Hospital. She would be pronounced dead. A 48-year-old director named Joel Souza was transported by ambulance to a local hospital. He was released the next day. At the time making this video, the investigation is in the early stages, but we do know that a firearm being operated by Alec Baldwin was involved in the shooting. One report indicated that a live cartridge was loaded into the weapon. No charges have been filed. Alec Baldwin tweeted saying that he was cooperating with the investigation and his heart was broken for the Hutchins family. The movie that was being filmed is titled Rust. It is a low-budget Western, $6 million. Just to put that in perspective, the average budget for an episode of The Crown on Netflix is $13 million. The incident occurred on the 12th day of a scheduled 21-day shoot. Some union crew members had protested the working conditions not long before the incident. They walked off the set just 6 hours before the shooting. Apparently, they were replaced by non-union crew members. One person on the set said that corners were being cut and that there were three misfires of a prop gun in the previous week. One incident involved Alec Baldwin's stunt double misfiring a gun twice. The shooting occurred when Alec Baldwin was rehearsing a scene outside of a church on the set. The scene involved a gunfight that started in the church, then Baldwin's character was supposed to back out of the church. A union that represents prop masters suggested that the shot that killed Hutchins and injured Souza was a single live round. The local sheriff said that the weapon was discharged by Alec Baldwin. Now moving to my analysis. There are three items that I'll cover here in this analysis. First, I'll talk about the Brandon Lee shooting that occurred in 1993. That story potentially provides context to the Alec Baldwin story. Second, I'll talk about my theory about what may have happened on the Rust movie set and raise some questions in that case. Third, I'll talk about the potential mental health effects of the Rust shooting based on what we saw from the Brandon Lee case. Starting with the first item. What happened in the case of Brandon Lee on the Crow movie set? Brandon Lee was the son of the famous martial artist and actor, Bruce Lee. He studied martial arts from a young age, both before and after his father died in 1973. Brandon Lee worked as a scriptwriter before landing some parts on TV and movies. He eventually landed the lead in the movie The Crow. Around midnight on March 31, 1993, during production of The Crow in Wilmington, North Carolina, 28-year-old Brandon Lee was shooting the scene where he was supposed to walk into an apartment and be shot by a criminal at a range of about 15 feet. The actor playing the criminal was Michael Massey. Massey was supposed to shoot Lee with a Smith & Wesson Model 629. This is a six-shot double-action revolver chambered in .44 Magnum. This weapon was made famous in the Dirty Harry film series. When Massey pointed the weapon and fired, a bullet struck Brandon Lee in the abdomen and lodged in his spine. After being struck, Lee fell backwards, but the scene was written so that he was supposed to fall forward. People on the set thought he was kidding around by laying on his back after the gunshot. Lee's trainer went over to Lee and noticed that he was unconscious and breathing heavily. A medic came over and monitored Lee's pulse, which was regular to start with, but then it slowed down and stopped over the course of 2 to 3 minutes. Lee was rushed to a hospital where he would die just after 1 p.m. The big question here, of course, was how did a firearm being used as a prop in the production of a movie fire a projectile that would kill an actor. To understand what happens here, it's important to understand a little bit about how a firearm operates. The specific weapon in this case was a revolver. It had a cylinder with six chambers. Each chamber holds a single ammunition cartridge. A cartridge has four parts. Sometimes cartridges are incorrectly called bullets. A bullet is just one part of the cartridge. It is the part that flies out of the barrel. It is often made of lead, copper, brass, and steel, as well as other materials. The other three parts would be the casing, primer, and the propellant. Sometimes called smokeless powder, the main ingredient is nitrocellulose. A firearm is typically discharged using a hammer or striker that strikes a primer. Revolvers use hammers. Semi-automatic pistols can use either a hammer or a striker. After being struck, the primer ignites the propellant. The propellant does not explode, rather there is a deflagration. It burns very quickly, building up a tremendous amount of pressure. This pressure propels the bullet down the barrel and out of the weapon. With all this in mind, let's move back to the set of The Crow. In this movie, they used a real Smith & Wesson Model 629. It's referred to as a prop in the movies, but a prop can still be a real item. This was a real gun. In a scene that preceded the one in which Lee was killed, they used real cartridges so they could shoot close-ups. I imagine they wanted to see the cartridges, and specifically the bullets, inside of the cylinder. Now, with the cartridges they used to make the gun appear loaded, they removed the propellant. But the other three parts of the cartridge were still there, the primer, the casing, and the bullet. Now, there's two possibilities at this point when looking at how a bullet ended up in the barrel. First, at some point around the time of that scene, someone pulled the trigger when the gun was loaded with those cartridges that did not have propellant. The hammer struck the primer. This created enough force to separate the bullet from the casing, leaving it in the barrel of the weapon. It wasn't enough force to fire it out of the weapon, but just to move it a little bit. Second, the bullet was not properly seated back into the casing, and it became separated. It simply fell into the barrel. Either way, the bullet was still in the gun, but whoever handled the weapon did not know this, even though they should have known. When the cartridges were removed, they should have noticed that one of the bullets was missing. Moving to the scene where Brandon Lee was killed, during this scene, they loaded the weapon with blanks. A blank is just like a regular cartridge, except it doesn't have a bullet. Sometimes the end of the casing is crimped, and there may be some other material put in the cartridge so the propellant doesn't come out, often something like paper or plastic. When Michael Massey pointed the revolver at Brandon Lee and pulled the trigger, the propellant deflagrated and pushed the bullet out of the barrel.
Allegedly is back for Season 2, a new crime every time. In each episode of Allegedly, you'll hear a crime told to you by the person who experienced it, intermingled with actor portrayals, original music, immersive soundscapes, to create a cinematic experience for your ear. Season 2's stories include a young woman finding salvation in God, only to realize the leader of her church was running a sex cult. A case of a con artist swindling a kindly older man until he couldn't do anything to stop her. A landlord exploiting a mentally disabled man and keeping him a virtual prisoner. An act of bullying spinning a promising young man's life into total chaos. And a luxury boat captain inexplicably detained in a foreign prison with seemingly no hope of ever getting out. New episodes release every other week. Look for Allegedly from Voyage Media anywhere you listen to podcasts.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
An investigation by the Wilmington District Attorney determined that several crew members were negligent. They had ignored well-recognized safety guidelines. Many people were surprised that no charges were filed in the case of Brandon Lee's death. Perhaps North Carolina did not want to alienate the film industry. With the circumstances of Brandon Lee's death in mind, let's move to the incident on the set of the movie Rust. As I mentioned, at this point we don't know everything, but here's what we know so far. During a rehearsal, the armorer, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, who was responsible for making sure the weapons were safe, placed three weapons on a rolling cart. So this position, armorer, is one that we see on many sets that would involve weapons. There's typically a head armorer and an assistant armorer. The assistant director, Dave Halls, picked up one of the firearms, specifically a Colt revolver, and handed it to Alec Baldwin while shouting the term cold gun. This meant that the weapon did not contain any type of ammunition, not live ammunition, and not blanks. So when a weapon is declared cold, nothing is supposed to be in it. Alec Baldwin is supposed to draw the pistol from a holster. The second time he did this, the weapon discharged. A projectile struck Hutchins in the chest, it passed through her, and struck Souza in the shoulder. He was standing just behind her. My understanding is that neither Alec Baldwin nor Dave Halls believed the weapon was loaded with any type of cartridge. Here are a few thoughts I have about this situation. Item number one. In September of 2021, Hannah Gutierrez Reed said in a podcast that she was worried that she didn't have enough experience for the job. She was particularly fearful of loading blanks into weapons, saying she didn't know anything about it. But her father trained her. Based on the information available right now, it appears as though she was correct about not being ready. Item number two, firearms should always be respected. I don't think Alec Baldwin or Dave Halls were to blame for this in the sense that they did something intentional, but anyone handling a firearm must be responsible for that weapon. Someone should never shout a term like cold gun if they have not checked the weapon themselves. If they didn't want to take the time to understand how the weapon worked or to check it, they should not have been handling firearms. No matter how many people on that set check the weapon to make sure that it's safe, whoever touches it should always check it themselves, just to be sure. It doesn't provide any comfort to Alec Baldwin or Dave Halls to know that there's somebody else to blame. I find it incongruent that Alec Baldwin trusted the armorer to provide an unloaded weapon, yet as an anti-gun activist, he has expressed distrust for law-abiding citizens who want to own and carry firearms. I guess Baldwin is saying that an inexperienced 24-year-old armorer can safely operate weapons, but American citizens can't. This incident appears to contradict his conclusion. Item number three, the gun should never have been pointed at the members of the crew. If this was another actor, like in the Brandon Lee situation, that would make more sense, although it's still not a good idea. If it was one of those scenes where Alec Baldwin was pointing a gun directly at a camera, they should have been using a remote camera or otherwise protected the crew. Item number four, the explanation from the police doesn't explain why a projectile was fired from the weapon. If somebody accidentally left blanks in it, that's one thing, that's dangerous enough, but how was there a projectile in the barrel? Perhaps someone negligently loaded a live cartridge in one of the cylinder chambers, or something happened similar to the Brandon Lee incident. Somehow a bullet was lodged in the barrel from a prior use of the weapon. So again, all this is based on initial reports. Who knows what really happened? Perhaps the weapons were switched without the armorer knowing. Maybe low-budget Western movie-hating aliens came down from outer space and put a bullet in the barrel. Anything's possible at this point. Now moving to the last question. What is the potential mental health effect on somebody like Alec Baldwin? There are reports indicating that he was distraught over the death of Hutchins. He was very upset and feels terrible about what happened. In light of what happened to Michael Massey after he accidentally killed Brandon Lee, we know that the mental health impact can be devastating. Michael Massey was never the same after the incident. He was traumatized. He took a year off of acting, but he had nightmares for years after the incident. He could never reconcile his failure to check the weapon. It only would have taken a couple of seconds. He could not distance himself from the reality of what he failed to do. Michael Massey would die in 2016 at the age of 64, having never escaped the effects of the tragedy. As I mentioned, I don't think Alec Baldwin was primarily the one at fault, but it is likely there was something he could have done to prevent the unintentional discharge. That is something he will have to live with for the rest of his life. It doesn't matter if the investigation finds that one of the crew members was at fault. It doesn't matter how many times people make statements to Alec Baldwin like, "It's not your fault. You're an actor. You're not supposed to understand how firearms work. Anybody would have done the same thing. It could have happened to anybody." None of those statements will assist him in dealing with this. As always, I think the best move is to seek counseling and be honest about what happened. The situation has been a tragedy for everybody involved, the victims, their families, and for Alec Baldwin. I hope that everybody takes the necessary steps to protect their mental health as they start down a long road to recovery.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.